Welcome to the show. My name is Kim Harris. This is Stories of Change. You know what? It's very hard to sit here and listen to the news and not feel the kind of all of the distressing things that are happening in the world. And it really makes me even more passionate about stories of change and what it actually takes to change, because the world needs us. The world needs us very badly to make some improvements. So let's talk about change this morning. As you will all know, if you've been following on the show, I am doing a project which is called The Togetherness Effect. It's a project that is being funded by the Yarra Ranges Council. It's an economic recovery committee initiative to bring some information to you about what it actually takes to change, because we have sometimes unexpected change thrust upon us and sometimes we don't know really what to do with it. Sometimes we want to change purposefully and intentionally and we don't know how to go about that either. So I'm hoping to bring you some information about that. It is a fair bit of information, so I really encourage you to follow along on my website, kimharris.co, and re-listen to any episodes that you've missed out on. So a bit of a recap, we've been talking about the six stages of change. And within each stage, as you move from one stage into the next stage, there are some really simple little processes that you can apply to actually move you from one stage to the next and make the change process much, much easier for yourself. So we've been talking about those nine processes in a little bit more detail. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about the first three, which was consciousness raising, social liberation, and using your emotions. Then last week we talked about self-reevaluation, your commitment, and also countering behaviours. And today we're going to talk about the environmental controls, rewards, and my most favourite one of all, which relates to the togetherness effects, which is helping relationships. So I hope you'll join me, but I'm going to play a song to inspire us, which is by The Animals, I'm Going to Change the World. So enjoy this one. That's Mumford and Sons, The Cave. What an interesting story behind that song. Love it, love it, love it. Lyrics are very powerful to me. I love words. Obviously, a big part of my life is a study of language, because you can tell a lot by the way people put their words together. And we are talking about change today, and I'm going to be using my words to try to explain a few concepts to you. And we're talking about these processes. So they're kind of like little step-by-step things you can do. The good thing and to remember in all of this, I'm giving you a lot of information, but really we just want to change doesn't have to be that dramatic. It can be just one little simple thing. So you can choose any one of these things depending on where you're at in life and what kind of change you might like to make. Some of these are more helpful at times than others. So what are the nine processes? Well, we've been talking about them. Today we're going to talk about a process called environmental control. So when you're going through a change process and when you want to go from one stage of change into another stage, environmental controls are really helpful. They're an action-orientated step. So it's kind of around the fourth step or the fourth stage of change, which is the action phase. This is a very action-orientated process. Environmental controls are really when we decide we're going to make a change now, we've planned it out, and we're going to restructure our environment to increase the probability that we will take the new behaviour that we want to action. And we make it as easy as we possibly can to maybe avoid an old behaviour and replace it perhaps with a new behaviour. So there's all sorts of things you can do to restructure your environment. So I've heard some really good examples over the years and worked with different clients on this, and like one person used to put their junk food right down in the back shed at the back of the property, so that if they wanted it, they'd have to go out in the middle of the night through the rain, through the wet, through the cold to go into the shed to get the junk food. And they also put it up on a really high shelf, so they would need a ladder to reach it. So that's an example of an environmental control. It's sort of something just putting a few more obstacles between them and the treat. They were attempting to release some weight, which they successfully did do. So that's one example where you can make things, yeah, just more difficult for yourself. So add obstacles. But we can also make things easier And a good example of this came up in my life recently because I'm wanting to do a little bit more exercise than I have been. And I was thinking, okay, how can I slot exercise in so that I don't actually have to stop what I'm doing and get distracted and go off and do it. I've got to kind of do it in an organic way, like within my life. So my kids, when I drop them off for school, there's actually a gym on the way to my kids' school. And I was thinking to myself, it's a bit hard for me to do it in the morning after I've dropped them off. But I was thinking I could leave an hour earlier and drop in at the gym on the way. It's literally on the same road. So that's an example of trying to use the structure of the environment around me, the services and the resources that are around me, and try to kind of slot it in the kind of rhythm of my life. Got much more chance of pulling in there. If I set a plan and it's not like I've got to stop my work in the middle of the day and go and do some exercise, it's kind of just on the way, just leaving a little bit earlier. A couple of examples there. I think also as a mother of eight, I'm not sure if you can fully appreciate how much washing we do in my household, but I've got a couple of washing machines and we've got, you know, loads of washing and things like that. So I've got a simple example is just having a dirty clothes basket in all of my kids' rooms so that the structure is there, the environment is set up for them to put their dirty clothes in, they bring it to the laundry, and then if it doesn't get brought to the laundry, it doesn't get done. So these are all simple examples of environmental controls. They're very action orientated. So that's some ideas there for you. That is the seventh of nine processes. I'm going to play another song now. This one's by the Rockmelons. It's called Stronger Together, because I really believe that we are much, much, much better off when we are doing things together. So enjoy this one by the Rockmelons. I've got a question for you. What motivates you more, the carrot or the stick? Everybody is slightly different. Some people really, really do. What really motivates them is this idea of some kind of future reward. And some people just want to typically avoid, you know, some kind of unpleasantness. So we have what in psychology, they refer to it having an approach or an avoidance kind of a mentality. So when we are approaching something, it might be a good result. And if we're avoiding something, it might be an unpleasant result. So this is important because this comes into the eighth process of change, which is called rewards. So rewards are all about punishment, and rewards are kind of the opposite sides of the same coin. But as I have learned as a parent, and well, I'm sure many of you have too, that punishment is often less effective than a reward type of system. So unfortunately with punishment, it's not about teaching, and it sometimes will temporarily suppress a behaviour, but it doesn't actually lead to a long-lasting permanent change. Rewards have been proven to be the most effective thing when it comes to helping, especially in that action maintenance type of stages of the process of change. So rewards often lead to, like I said, that long-lasting change. And what would you like to know? Some examples of how you can set up some rewards. Of course you would. So some things are really simple, like let's say you quit smoking and you've been sitting, you know, paying for the cigarette. So you could put that money aside and perhaps buy yourself a present or a trip or a vacation or some kind of purchase or something that you've really wanted. Another really simple reward is just getting your helping partners, whoever they may be, and I'm going to talk about that more after I talk about this one, the eighth one. But praise we can elicit from our helping partners, and we need to learn to ask them to praise us and encourage us and give us that kind of moral support. Another really fun way to include reward system is something that I do with my accountability partner, and we put bets on each other. We bet each other that we can or can't do things, and some of them have been quite funny. So one of the bets was, you know, you'd have to eat dog food if you didn't stick with something, and one that I bet my friend that if she didn't do something by the end of the day, she'd have to do a Facebook Live naked. So she got herself right into gear and got on with it. So we kind of do it a bit playfully and a bit in a fun way. So this can be a really fun thing to inject into your change process. What the most important thing is that a reward reinforces the progress of the positive path. So it's not necessarily that you achieve any kind of result. It's actually you're rewarding yourself for the positive progress you're making. You're rewarding yourself for the action that you're taking. It's not so much about the end goal necessarily. It's about more that you're taking those positive behavioral steps to change anything that you would like to change. So this is a tricky one. Some people do have strange feelings about rewarding themselves. So this is where a helping partner can also be really, really helpful, because sometimes we need a little bit more perspective on how we are going and what our progress is. Some people, depending on how you've been raised, it's really, really tricky to feel like you're deserving of a reward. We do have these universal fears that are quite often underneath our behaviours. There are three main fears that drive a lot of behaviour. So some people have an unconscious fear of not being enough or not being worthy or not being loved. So if you've got a pattern of one of those fears going threaded through your life, the thought of then rewarding yourself if you're feeling quite unworthy deep down can be really, really challenging. So really, really good to just check in with your feelings about rewards. And then if you do feel like there's some resistance and you think, oh, I don't really deserve a reward, or it feels weird to reward myself, that might be the point where you talk to your helping partner about that and get some perspective on how you really are going. And this is one of those things that I have actually outsourced to my children, because they love rewarding me. Interestingly, I'm very hard on myself, and I have this little jar on my desk, and every task that I complete gets put in the jar. And at the end of the week, my daughter will count up how many tasks I've completed. And depending on how I've gone, she happily takes on the task of rewarding me. And yeah, she's really, really good at it. So think about that. Think about, is there someone that you can outsource your rewards to and find some way of communicating sort of your goals for the week or your goals for the day, and then checking in with them and talking about your progress and letting them be the ones to determine, you know, what it is you deserve or what you don't deserve. Like I said, I've actually found my daughter has been absolutely wonderful in doing this, and comes to Friday night and she'll go and have a bath, light your candles, sing your play your music, listen to your favorite songs. And yeah, she's really been a really, really good helping partner in this regard for me. So some ideas there on including some rewards in your life. And it kind of goes back to your work ethic too. So I've kind of touched on it there, like tasks and things, you know, that I'm trying to complete each week. When we're doing a good job, there's lots of things that kind of just take care of themselves. Like when we deliver a good product or a good service. And when people do this, successful people often just have this one thing in common, which is they really have a great work ethic. You know, they show up, they do the work, and they keep going. And I think this is true of lots of people in our community. I think we've got a lot of people that have a really, really strong work ethic. So when you've done your best work, things often will fall into place. And when you think about it, the people who are really the most successful at anything are the ones who don't quit the longest. They just keep going, they keep doing a good job, they keep trying to do their best. And it is hard sometimes to reward that kind of work ethic if you're a worker, right? You just think, well, of course, that's, you know, what we do. This is what we need to do. You know, we all need money, we need to get on with things. So you know, maybe think about if you find it hard to reward yourself, give over the control of that to somebody else and let them observe you and give you that feedback when you've done a good job. Because I think that's really, really, I think work is the heart of, you know, of this kind of thing. It's like, what is the progress you're making? What is the work that you have done towards your change? And just get someone to help you point out the good points for you if you have a bit of trouble with that. And with that, I'm going to play another song. This is by the Black Sorrows. It's called Hold On To Me. So it's sort of all these songs today that I'm playing are all about togetherness and holding on to, you know, sometimes in this case, hold on to me is this encouragement to lean on somebody else. So enjoy this one. It's 8:48. Welcome back to the show. This is Stories of Change, and we're talking about what it actually takes to change. Like, how do you actually break that down as a process so that it makes it easier for you? You can just take a nice few simple steps and start to engage in the change process. So we've talked about a couple already, but this is my absolute favorite one. So this is the ninth and final process that you can use to transition from one stage to another stage, and it's called helping relationships. I know I've alluded to it quite often. I've left my favourite to last, the lucky last one. And so let me get into helping relationships. What are they? Well, when we are changing, a lot of the time we're self-changing. We don't actually really need a lot of help. We don't necessarily to go and see a counsellor or a psychologist or a psychiatrist. It's not that kind of that level of help that we need. So sometimes we're just having a go on our own without professional help. Now, this doesn't mean that we refuse care or support or assistance from people that could help us. It just means that sometimes we don't actually feel like we need that. So what can happen, though, is we can find it much, much more helpful if we've got some help from some significant others. So this could be just someone who is caring or understanding or accepting in your life. It could be a friend, a family member. It could be a member of your clergy or a minister at church. You know, just anyone in particular who you know has got that kind of caring, understanding, accepting kind of vibe. They can be really, really, really helpful during the change process. And this is what I would really love to encourage everyone in the community to just think about and try on. We can do so much good in the world. I'm not sure if you've ever heard about the butterfly effect. The butterfly effect is this idea of, like, if a butterfly flaps its wings on the east coast of Australia, you know, it can end up as a tsunami across the ocean on the other side of the world. These things have ripple effects, and it's the same with the way that we feel. So they've actually determined that every person on the planet affects about 80,000 people stemming out from them. So if you're in a good mood and you just simply smile at someone, that can have a ripple effect across about 80,000 people, they've calculated, which is just amazing. So, yeah, and likewise, if you're in a really bad mood, that will ripple out. And so you can definitely see it's actually kind of puts us in this position where we need to think about, am I acting courageously, lovingly, willingly, acceptingly? Am I trying to be a good person? Because it has a ripple effect, and it's a very, very, very powerful force across the world when we actually do take the time to help each other. And when we help ourselves to get into a good frame of mind, we're potentially impacting 80,000 other people in a very positive way. So worth changing, I think, our mood and learning how to transition through problematic emotions, because, yeah, we do feel angry from time to time. We will feel sad from time to time. But just like the weather, emotions are very, very changeable. So learning how to do all these things is really, really valuable. But helping relationships are a primary mechanism for support during the change process. So where the courage comes in is where we need to learn how to communicate with people effectively, you know, where we actually request support or ask for support, where we actually talk about our preferences. With the last tip around rewards, we might need to talk to someone and go, you know, what is a reward for me? Is you just giving me a pat on the back, or meeting me down the pub after work for a cold beer, like, or something like that. I've got a few fellas that love to do the gardening and reward themselves with a nice cold beer at the end of their work. So we have preferences in what is considered a reward for us. And sometimes we need to negotiate our needs for that reward. Like, it's got to kind of fit in with other people, and we've got to be respectful of other people and what they've got going on in their world as well. And so there's this wonderful exchange then when we're open and vulnerable and courageous enough to sort of say, hey, I'm working on this thing and I'd really appreciate your support. And when that person says, yeah, I'll help you with that, it's then educating them along the way about your experience of that. And sometimes it will be not so good. Sometimes you'll feel a lot of resistance and you'll feel like it's really hard, and it's like talking to this helping partner all through the process, understanding that we can't control other people, so we can't demand them, you know, to reward us or praise us. So that's why I started out by talking about who are the people in your life that really care and that are very understanding and very accepting, and how can you enlist those special people as a helping partner in your change process. Very, 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 very helpful and very supportive. And this is what the togetherness effect is all about. When we do things together, when we actually help each other change, it's much, 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 much easier for people to continue and to feel, you know, supported through the process. So that is the ninth and final process. So lots for you to think about, I know. And we do, as I said earlier, have all of these resources freely available on the website. So you can re-listen to them and think about, well, okay, I really think I'm ready to take some action. So I think, you know, getting someone to support me. Another interesting one, I was just talking to one of my clients with the other day, was she's gone back to study as an adult learner. And she was saying she kind of looks at the textbook and it's just like this blob of words and mess, and she says it might as well be in Japanese for all of her level of understanding, and there's just some terms that she doesn't quite understand. And so a good example for a helping partner with her was we were talking about, and she thought, well, maybe a tutor would be good, because tutors have the knowledge and they can just fill in some of those knowledge gaps very quickly and help her to be on her way with her studies. So that's an example of a helping partner as well. So I thought I'd put that out there. But with the theme of today and this idea of togetherness and helping partners, the world is full of mentors, and a lot of them have already put down their advice in books and resources and online programs. And sometimes all we have to do is reach out and take advantage of it. Most of the time, we're sometimes too busy or thinking that it's way too complicated. But the right answer can oftentimes be very, very simple. Like just, okay, well, let's just get a tutor. Let's just find someone who knows about this subject matter really, really well, so they can pick out and pinpoint the knowledge gaps for you. Something very simple. Yeah, so very worth repeating the simplicity of it. And yeah, with that note and with the idea of togetherness and doing it together and reaching out for support, I've got another song here by Bob Marley, which is One Love, People Get Ready. Enjoy this one. It's just coming up on about 7 minutes to nine, so getting to the top of the hour now. And today we've been talking further about the nine common processes for change. And these are all building blocks. And sometimes, obviously, we're not using all nine of these processes. We might just pick one when we need it, when we're hoping to move from one stage of change to the next. So they very much are building blocks. And we start with one, and then we use that as a kind of a guiding light. And then we build on another one and another one. The best changes are the really simple ones, the really not dramatic ones, the uncomplicated ones, like just drinking an extra glass of water a day, or actually just breathing more every day. I know that sounds really simplistic, but interestingly, when we release weight, we actually release weight through aspirating. Like, so as we breathe out, we can actually lose weight. I bet you didn't know that. So it's really, really important to breathe, and some simple breathwork exercises. Just put a little reminder in your phone every hour to breathe deeply. And you can do different kind of metrics of breathing. So you can kind of breathe in for 5 seconds, hold your breath for 5 seconds, and let the breath out for 5 seconds. And you're literally releasing your body of excess weight. So there you go. Simple is the key. And just knowing how to do some of these things can be incredibly empowering for people. And this is why I'm talking about this. And thankfully, the Yarra Rangers Council has enabled me to do this program for you. I am Kim Harris. I'm the founder and CEO of the Conscious Thinking Company. And change is my bag, baby. I really, really love change. I love change work. Individual change and organizational change is a real focus of my life's work. So really, really love this topic. But yes, I appreciate it can be quite overwhelming when you think, oh my God, she's got 6 stages and 9 processes. What the hell? So just, it's one little habit, and whatever works for you, you make that your habit and you just persist with it. And eventually you just start to upgrade. Actually, you upgrade the level of problems, but then you just use the same process again in a different context, and you just go onwards and upwards. You'll be a change expert like me in no time. So if you've missed out on the other, all of the nine processes, you can recap those on the website. But let's do a recap of what we talked about today. We talked about the final three of nine processes for change. The first one we talked about was the environmental control. So that's a very action-orientated step you can take, where you actually restructure your environment to increase the probability of either avoiding something that you want to stop doing or increase the chances of you actually doing it by rejigging your environment. So that's environmental controls. We also have rewards. So we talked about this idea of what motivates you more, the carrot or the stick. And knowing yourself and knowing how you're wired, you use that to your advantage. So you can either put in place something that you want to avoid, like the bets like I had with my friend. You might have to eat dog food or do something live on Facebook, you know, naked. Yeah, place a bet with somebody if it's fun and lighthearted. And that might be something that you could use to avoid a problem behavior. Or it could be the carrot for you. You might like to have a reward. You might like to, at the end of a really significant change, maybe you deserve a holiday or something like that. So work towards work in whichever way suits you. But the idea is punishment is the less effective of both. We actually want to stimulate where possible an approach mentality. That is where we're working towards the future and a desired goal. We like pleasurable things. We want to avoid painful things and work with your strength. If you are more motivated by the stick, then just maybe a painful bet could be a fun way to motivate you. So that's the eighth of nine. And then the lucky last one is helping relationships. And we talked about the role of those really caring people in your life. I'm talking about those understanding types, the accepting types, the people who are encouraging and supportive and will give you praise for the progress that you're making. No matter how small it is, it's really, really important to acknowledge all of those little things, because a lot of little things compound over time to make a very, very significant change. And that's really the best way to tackle anything, one small chunk at a time. We actually change anything kind of 12 weeks at a time. So just give yourself the time. Hook up with someone that's really encouraging and supportive. And like I said, think outside of, you know, your partner perhaps, think outside of friends, you've got other family members, you've got your clergy, you've got ministry. Also, there are professionals as well who can help you. So there's a summary of what we've talked about today. And yeah, as I said, you can re-listen to any and recap anything that you've missed on our previous sessions on the website kimharris.co. We've also got a podcast podcast on Yarra Valley's website. So that's at yarravalley.org.au. Very, very wonderful to have you on the show today. Next week, I'm going to be starting to talk about how you can have some of these conversations.